Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things. This time we've got an extra special episode, as we do each week. It's a patron-demanded coverage. This one comes in from longtime listener Emmy. Is that correct, Steve?
It sure does.
The movie is A Night at the Opera from 1935 from the famous Marx Brothers. This is my first Marx Brothers movie, I think. Steve, what about you?
It's my first as well.
This is a
cultural blind spot for myself, personally. A lot of like movies, especially of this era, the 30s and pretty much anything before the 60s, it's like I probably haven't seen it.
I'm pretty ignorant when it comes to cinema. I've seen a lot of Hitchcock, of course. And I've recently started, you know, over the past few years, been getting into Kurosawa and stuff like that. But I've seen one movie older than this. Because I've never seen a silent film. I've never watched like Birth of a Nation or any of that weird shit. knowing like the insidious undertones of this movie or overtones of those movies.
Well, of Birth of a Nation in particular. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never watched any like Charlie Chaplin or anything all the way through. And It's on the list. Like Modern Times, that kind of stuff is on the list. Never have though. So M, for the German film M from 1931, I think, is the oldest movie I've watched. So this doesn't take that cake, but it's among that, and my first Marx Brothers entry. So this is pretty early into the talkies, as it were.
The talkies, you see.
But I don't have any context or extra intelligence to add as far as like the Marx Brothers oeuvre or what they meant to the culture. Though I know that they were ridiculously popular, and you see why watching this. So this is our first watch through of A Night at the Opera. We'll do our best to do our usual play-by-play, but there's really not much to that.
It's honestly, I was having some trouble taking notes for this particular movie because a lot of the movie is based around rapid-fire jokes. Like they're just joke, one-liner.
There's only five or six setups and then just like lengthy jokes throughout that are rapid fire, like you said.
Yeah. So I was like trying to write down every joke at the beginning of the watch. I'm like, I can't keep up. This is too quick. I can't do it. Those Marx Brothers and know what they're doing. They're rapid firing on me.
It's kind of amazing. It's really interesting to watch from the lens of like, you know, they weren't that good at even recording sound yet. You know, like some of the during some of the musical numbers, like you can hear the sound kind of blow out. And I mean, it's hard enough nowadays, much less when nobody knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting from that perspective. I'm interested to know what you thought, Steve. I know we both have kind of similar tastes in slapstick comedy. We're both Mel Brooks fans, Monty Python fans. You can see the you know, DNA of those legendary filmmakers tracing back to people like the Marx Brothers. Mm-hmm. So it was fun to watch it for that reason as well. What did you think watching A Night at the Opera?
This is a very interesting movie to watch. Like I really appreciated the comedy that they were all putting out, specifically Groucho Marx. I think anything that he does as Otis B. Driftwood in this movie is gold. Like he's spitting out some amazing jokes. Chico Marx as Fiorello, I think I'm pronouncing that right. He's also very funny. I gotta be honest with you, the Harpo Marx, Tommaso, more silent, dumb guy, slapstick jokes don't really do anything for me on a whole. Like usually, like I would be one of the people that's in this movie, like, get out of here, dummy, like chase him with a hammer.
Yeah.
And then he would knock me out with a hammer blow.
Yeah, I would say like, he's going to knock you out for sure.
I would be Gottlieb in this situation because I would say, like, get out of here, you weirdo. these movies are always fascinating to me because it's 1935 when this is made. And the whole time I'm just watching it, just like, holy shit, this movie's almost, it's approaching 100 years old, right?
Yeah.
It's getting there. And just watching just human beings from that time and just how people talked and moved and walked around and the way the stage setups were and the different type of shots that they used and how they didn't care to just splice in takes at, without changing camera angles. They're like, oh, camera change, but the scene didn't. Like, I love that type of shit. It's just fascinating just to kind of watch how the world was in this particular moment in terms of cinema. It's very eye-opening and just incredible to watch. And that's part of the allure, I think, for me at least, watching these older movies is just being amazed, like, wow, look at all the stuff they're doing to make a movie that's so easy for us to make now, but for then had to be so much harder. Just the type of cameras they're using, the type of lenses they're using, how you have to light a black and white film completely different with how you light a color movie.
Yeah.
It's just the talent involved is just jaw dropping. Cause like I said, stuff that literally takes me a second to do today with cameras and lighting would take them like, it floors me how they could do some of the stuff that they're doing.
I agree. Like I do think it's fascinating to imagine life outside the frames of the movie when watching a movie like this. And also like what's going on from a filmmaking perspective, especially after watching like Babylon and, you know, movies about old Hollywood, the pre-New Hollywood. It's fascinating to me, but also I think it's cool. Like this is a movie about taking a shot at upper class in a way, right? High society in a way that I can always appreciate as a poor.
Let's eat the rich, man.
Eat the rich.
Eat them rich people.
Groucho Marx says ACAB. Says it right here. and you know, from that perspective, I had a great time. And honestly, I've talked about it on other episodes this week, but it was a brutal week for me work-wise and then watching the amount Same. Of stuff we needed to watch for the pod. And this was the last thing on the list.
Same.
And after an onslaught, and it was like, oh, this is the movie from 1935. Like I told my wife, like, I need to put the baby to bed. I can't get her to sleep. I'm frustrated because I got to go watch this movie from 1935. And she said, that sounds terrible. You know, because it's my wife's not into that kind of stuff, right?
Like,
I laughed. And anyway, I sat down exhausted as I was, and I kind of gave up on my notes-ish early on, but I really was entranced by this movie, and I got some really hard laughs out of it. Like, I truly did. I'm a pun guy.
This was, of all the movies we've watched recently, this was the one where I'm like, I need to give up on trying to take notes because I feel like I'm doing the movie a disservice by trying to take notes.
Yeah, there's so much to miss, so many double entendres flying at you.
It's flying a mile a minute. It's incredible.
But we'll do our best to recap and talk about some of the things that we enjoyed specifically. We open the movie with the iconic Metro Goldwyn Mayer scary lion, Leo the Lion, and his roar. By the way, MGM was founded in 1924, so this is only like less than a decade later into the roaring lion shtick. And we get Driftwood, the character played by Groucho Marx, at a dinner, and it's this hilarious scene where Mrs. Claypool is eating by herself. She's waiting for Driftwood, and he's been behind her eating with someone else for an hour. And there's a couple great little lines where he's like, oh, look at this bill. I wouldn't want to pay that, and gives it to the woman.
This is an outrage. If I were you, I wouldn't pay it for.
Yeah.
I wouldn't pay it.
Yeah.
I laughed so hard when before the whole reveal that he's behind her, she's like, oh, boy. And this 45-year-old man comes up to her and she's like, can you page Mr. Driftwood? And he's like, right away. And then he like takes two steps away from her. Is there a Mr. Driftwood here? I don't know why that made me laugh so hard.
It's little shit like that. Like I started laughing harder than I thought I would. But that whole interplay where he's just open about the fact that he's taking advantage of her because she's rich and that's his whole shtick. But he's supposedly so charming and it's, I was in immediately. I was like, oh, this is interesting. I couldn't
figure out what his deal was the whole time. Like, is he a con artist? Is he?
Yeah, he's a grifter, you know,
but he also works for the opera.
Well, he got that job through Mrs. Claypool, which is why he lost it when he's no longer seducing the widow. Cause she's like, you keep hanging out with that riffraff.
So what does he do for the opera? Like what is his role?
I don't know.
Is he just Miss Claypool's
guy? He's the talky guy. What does anyone do in a high position at a company though? Really?
Amen, man. what do they do?
Nothing. And then we cut to this like costume bit. It's how we meet Tommaso, who's Chico Marx? Is that his name?
Harpo is Tommaso.
Is it? It's Harpo.
Yeah, Chico is Fiorella.
Fiorella. They're Italians, hey? And there's like a costume bit where he's dressed as like a clown, and then he's got another costume under that, and a costume under that, and then a dress under that. And Laspari, the kind of villain, the main famous opera singer of the movie, is angry that he's wearing all his stuff, and he's like physically abusing him. He's like beating him with a whip and shit.
Yeah, is Tommaso like his like?
It's like his
servant
lackey
or something.
It's weird. Yeah, yeah. I don't know what they're related. It's like his gimp.
He like chases him. He like whips him out of Pulp Fiction.
Get back in your cage. Actually, he was in a trunk as well at one point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just like Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, he chases him out of the room with a whip, and he runs into this woman named Rosa, who's like, hey, man, you're lucky to get rid of that guy, because he fires him. He's like, you're fired. Get out of here. But then he comes back out. And he's like, I need you back. I need to beat you some more.
Well, I think there's that element. But also I got the vibe that he like heard Rosa, who he's trying to woo. And so he pretends to be nice to him in front of her.
I'm just joshing.
Yeah, come on back
in here. I'm just joshing.
But Laspari entices Rosa to dinner with an invitation from Hermann Gottlieb, who is... We met in the first dinner scene. He's like the New York Opera House owner. And that's her dream, is to sing in New York, say? So she's like, oh, okay, I'll go to dinner with you for that. But she's in love with Ricardo. He's in the chorus. He's an unknown tenor singer.
Yeah, he's got a great voice, but he just doesn't have that reputation yet.
He hasn't had the luck to break out yet. And
he's got what they call moxie.
Tommaso is a physical comedian. And I don't know if that's Harpo Marx's thing in all the movies. I know that Groucho is the leader, and he's always got those double entendre filled one liners as his thing. But he does like the scene where he's hitting the guy over the head with a hammer and then making him use smelling salts and then waking him up just to hit him again.
Oh, that'll get him. I just love the wry that Driftwood is just
it's not so good.
He's not really a part of the whole knocking out of what's his name? Fiorello? Or Laspari, sorry. He's not really a part of this whole thing, but he's just wryly standing there like, ah, that'll do it. Yeah, give him the smelling salts. That's good. Cool.
Teach you to talk to me that way. Yeah, he's always there to chime in. He doesn't snitch on Tommaso and Ricardo and the gang that are stowaways on the ship later. And he kind of helps them, but he's also just kind of amused by everything. And, mm-hmm. Even if it's hurting him, like he's got that tiny room and he just keeps inviting. One of my favorite lines of the room scene on the steamship is when the woman shows up, and one of the women shows up, she knocks on the door and she says, would you like a manicure? And he says, no, come on in. It's so offhanded. And he's just like, fuck it.
Yeah, come on in. Why not? He's an agent of chaos. It seems like he enjoys the chaos of the world that these other gentlemen bring.
And there was something comforting in this movie about the way that he would handle extreme setbacks. Like at one point he gets fired from his job because he's been hanging out with Tommaso and the gang, and he gets kicked out of the hotel, and he is trying to sit on the bench, but all of his other buddies took the bench and he has to sit on the grass. And then the guy comes by and he's like, get off the grass.
I don't even have the grass.
And then they all get up to greet Rosa, who's also been fired from the opera there. And he's like, well, at least I got my bench back. And it's dumb. It's like some old school Singing in the Rain type shit. It's a Wonderful Life kind of thing. But I was like very comforted in my like exhausted way by that. Cause that shit happens, you know?
Yeah. At least I got my bench.
Yeah. You just got to focus on the positive. Mm-hmm. But yes, so he there's a great scene that we skip by, though, at the very beginning here, where we get the contract for Ricardo joining the opera because what's his name? Fiorello wants to manage him. And there's this great back and forth with contracts between him and Driftwood where they keep. I don't think either one of them can read. So they're just making stuff up and they keep. So he keeps.
I think Groucho can read. He's just nearsighted or something.
Well, that's what he says, but I get the vibe that he said that because he can't read, but maybe.
I just love how he initially hands him the. It's one of my favorite lines where he hands him the contract. He's like, there's no need for you reading it because they're duplicates. Like, oh, okay.
And then he says it in duplicate. And there's no need for you to read it. They're duplicates.
And then they go back for like, can you hear? Well, I haven't heard anything yet. Yeah. Can you read? I can read, but I can't see it. And they just like kind of go back and forth for like a minute or two.
You know, he keeps ripping clauses off. And then at some point,
the party in the first shall be known in this contract as the party in the first part. Reread the first part. And they just, oh, we don't need that. Oh, this next paragraph, you're not going to like it. Well, no sense in ruining a new friendship with this way. Let's rip that one out, too. And they just keep making this long contract shorter and shorter. And then I laugh so hard when he's like, and this is the sanity clause. There's no need for a sanity clause. He's like, hey, you're not going to tell me there's no such thing as sanity clause.
Yeah,
like,
dude. Fucking. But my favorite part was right after he ripped off the second clause, Pharrell looks at him and says, oh, what do you got now? And he says, oh, about a foot and a half. It's like the length of the paper. And it's dumb. It's that kind of shit that got me unexpectedly. There's like little tiny things like when they're first together, the waiter comes up and it's those two with the contracts bit. And he says, I'll take two beers. And the other guy says, I'll take two beers, too. Like he clearly ordered him a beer. He's like, I'll take two beers, too. Again, I don't think anybody else would call out that as like their favorite joke, but it's little things like that that just took me out. Yeah, we get there's a $10 contract. Well, but after taxes, and they do that whole thing. It's just about break even. He can live like a prince as long as he doesn't eat. Anyway, we cut to Rosa Castaldi. She's going to New York, and it's Laspari's on the boat with her. And another dumb joke from Driftwood. He's like, do I have time to pay my hotel bill? No. Great. And then, you know.
Great. That works for me. And then there's this part. This is one part of the movie. I'm not, and I think we talked about this off air. Like, I'm not an opera guy. So all sure. The opera stuff like doesn't really hit.
No, none of the musical parts for the most part is working at all. Yeah, this movie could have been 40 minutes of awesomeness.
So they're all like, Laspari, won't you sing for us? And he makes up a lie.
Got the laryngitis.
Like, I've got the laryngitis. Really, he's just like, why would I sing for these people for free?
Why would I sing for free?
So they go to Rosa, like, Rosa, won't you sing? She's like, absolutely. And she starts singing the song. It's very long, and then it cuts to
She chooses to sing to cleverly say goodbye to Ricardo, right?
Yeah, and it's cutting to Ricardo, who's like, and this is the most, like, Jimmy Stewart-esque, like, always smiling. I'm just so happy. Rosa's singing to me. Like, that whole shtick. Yeah. He sticks out like a sore thumb in this movie. It's hilarious how much Ricardo does not fit anybody else in this movie.
Yeah.
But he's kind of getting into it, and everyone's like, Rosa's such a great singer. And you think the scene's over, and then Ricardo's like, I'm also singing too, and I will sing longer than Rosa. And by the end of the scene, all the people that had surrounded Rosa, like, sing, they all left.
Yeah, we're not here for you, weird guy. You're not on the fucking boat.
I don't know if that was intentional, but I was laughing so hard that everyone's like, I don't know, this fucking weirdo.
I'm sure it was. They seem like geniuses. Inside the boat, she's weeping, and then Driftwood has you could see that he's a kind character because he passes her the note from Ricardo. Like, this is what the doctor ordered. Take it every 2 hours. And it's just the note from Ricardo. But he's like riding the trunk with the valet guy the entire way. He hits another trunk. And
yeah, they go past the greatest aviators of our time, which are like three identical brothers with beards. And he's like, was that three fellows or one fellow with three beards?
And he sells the guy fake insurance, which is just his hotel bill.
Mm-hmm.
Give me that dollar. Gets to his tiny room after telling Mrs. Claypool that she has to meet him there in 10 minutes. And this is when we get the slapstick shtick of all of the, like the clown car, like all the people in the tiny room, because the three of them have stowed away in his trunk, one of them in the bottom drawer.
Tomasha's in the bottom drawer.
Makes a joke about his cheap suit, right? Well, there wasn't any room for us, so we had to sell the suit. What'd you get for it? $1.40. That sounds like my suit. it's a fucking cheap suit joke, but I appreciated it even in 2023.
Even when they like loaded his luggage into the room, he tells the bellhop, bellhop's like, can I do anything else for you? He's like, yeah, how about tomorrow you load me in instead of the luggage?
Well, yeah, he's like, maybe you can move this out so I can go in. But he's not mad about the situation.
Yeah, he's just kind of like,
I would be mad. It's so unlike me that I love it in a comforting way. Like I said, but my favorite joke,
he loves the chaos
of the entire movie, is so dumb. It's right here in this scene.
I love it too.
He said he's got insomnia. Don't wake him up. He's trying to sleep it off, you know? And I just fucking
was it Fiorello who says that?
I think it was, yes, Fiorello. If we're saying his name correctly over and over, that'd be great. Hold on. I also like when he's ordering food.
Yeah.
Got any stewed prunes? Which I guess stewed back then was a metaphor for drunk. And he says, give him some coffee. That'll sober him up. Meaning the prunes. I don't know. I thought that was funny. It's dumb as shit.
Well, I love when he's ordering the food. He's like, I'll have this and a hard boiled egg. And then Firo's like, and another hard boiled egg and another hard boiled egg and another hard boiled egg. Make it three hard boiled eggs.
I thought you were getting annoyed because they did that a lot.
They did it so, it was one of those things where it was annoying.
And then it was funny again. And then
it circled back to being funny. And then like, and what I assume is 16 hard boiled eggs.
Either a foghorn or we're about to hit a lighthouse or something like that. Or 16 hard boiled eggs.
And one duck egg. How many eggs did these guys need?
So many eggs. So many. Do you take tips? Yes. Have you got 2 fives? Well, yes, sir, I do. Well, then you don't need the 10 cents I was going to give you.
And then it starts this like really long skit of like people fitting into this tiny room and him just inviting people in.
Getting a manicure while they're trying to make the bed. And the one guy is basically a narcoleptic. This is what his real issue seems to be.
One woman's like, can I use your phone? Sure, come on in.
If you can get to the phone, it'll be a miracle. And then all of the waiters are in there with all the food. And then by the time Mrs. Claypool arrived to the room, they all tumble out, of course. Mm-hmm. And then we cut to kind of a dichotomy. Like we see all the rich people at dinner, and then it cuts to all of the regular people eating like giant pots of spaghetti and stuff, right?
And pots of spaghetti look great.
It did. It looks so much better. And
so amazing.
Tommaso's so amazed, you know, and then they start to jam after they eat all the food. And there's I hated all the musical scenes, I'll be honest.
Yeah, Ricardo, great voice. Not my thing.
No. But the translating accents is kind of like a shtick to me, and I have to get into that vibe. But I really did appreciate it eventually. But the music, I did not. Until this scene, I really... Tommaso reminded me of Martin Short. I don't know if that's...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
A weird thing of mine, but he just kind of looks like him.
I could see a Martin Short in his face.
His whole vibe reminded me of like Martin Short and I like the Kosikasa song. I did, but I loved when he was doing the slapstick piano for the kids and then when he played the harp. It was such a gorgeous two shot of the guy listening through the harp at Tommaso's face. And I don't know if he's really playing the harp, but it looked like he was, and it was kind of entrancing and beautiful. And I was all the way in at this point.
I love the piano scene because I just found myself watching the people, the kids and like the older folk who are kind of more in the background.
And I liked to imagine that most of them didn't even understand what a movie was all the way. And they were just having a great time.
They were losing their fucking minds. There was this one woman, I could not keep my eyes off her. She was like maybe like three rows back, but she's like,
what you mean.
She's like, just like losing it. Like he played a key and she'd be like, I'm feeling it. Like she was losing. And then I don't know why, but he like,
oh, he hurt his fingies.
And he was ending it by like, he was doing like a finger gun, but he would like when he would press the key, he would like, you know, pull the hammer of the finger gun. Something about it was like, bing, bing, bing. And the kids are loving it. He faked hurting his fingers and he's like, his limp wrist.
Spinning the stool.
Yeah. And then, like you said, the harp thing was mesmerizing to me because I've never actually sat and paid attention to someone playing the harp. So watching him, what I assume is him actually playing the harp, it was mesmerizing. I was like, wow, look at him go. Like, that's so talented to play an instrument like that.
Yeah, I was grateful that they stayed on that shot for so long. Mm-hmm. And it was gorgeously set up, the whole, even the composition of the shot itself. So,
but Chris, do you know what I'm grateful for?
Your mother.
I am. Carol's a gem.
My friendship.
Your friendship. Very grateful for that. But even more than that.
Coke Zero.
Love Coke Zero. It's the same taste as Coke.
I know what
with
you're
zero
grateful
sugar.
For.
What's that?
Patrons.
I am. Let's shout out some of our patrons who went on to patreon.com/streamingthings. And they have become a super Patreon producer for the month of June. These are people who signed up for the tiers $25 and up. And let's give them some
thanks. You got two fives?
Do you want to read them off this time, Sam?
I think I do. This is a much obliged to all of these. I don't know why I got a Western voice. I'm much obliged.
I mean, you have to actually read these because I have not made a duplicate.
We've not made a duplicate.
Nope.
And all the lists are typically in duplicate. This is Chester Copperpot, Stan Valentino, Svento 7, Jaron Bowers. Jaron? Let me start over. Correct the name for me, though.
All right.
Is it Jaron?
I think. I can't read it. It's turned away.
Jaron? J-A-R-O-N.
Let's just roll with it, baby.
Chester Copperpot, Stanton Valentino, Svento 7, Jaron Bowers, Jenny, A.K. Ashley Ray, Alan Tomlinson, Wendy O'Loughlin, Jason Hawkins, Trey Barrera, Conrad, David Malfara, Kaylee Simpson, Rabbit Dog, and a Barbie car. That's a name.
Oh, I don't
want to
be in that car.
No, you don't. Jose Ruben Cruz Rodriguez, Alexis Sadler, Thomas Alexander, Emmy, Joe Velez, Valerie.
Emmy, I like Emmy a lot. She made this episode happen.
Yeah, I've always wanted an Emmy. Aaron Layton, John Collins, six. Amanda King, Sun Loving Mortal, Andrew Gray, excuse me, Jadinklage Margoon, Jen Robinson,
is
Kate,
my name?
Chloe Richardson, Kalisha Reeves, Kiki Newton, Kevin Strother, Jeanette Murphy, Casey McCain, and Enza.
You crushed it, my boy.
Enza Morricone. Great composer.
Enza Morricone.
Loved your work on the Dollars trilogy.
Mm.
Back to the show. And by a nose. Where
by
are we?
War bonds.
Where are we at in this movie? Oh, they ate all the spaghetti. They jammed on the harp. War bonds. At this point, Laspari snitches on them.
Sarsaparilla's like, hey, there's stowaways.
Sarsaparilla. Laspari. So they get thrown into the detention cabin, at which point Tommaso opens a porthole. The water comes spewing in, and he tries to climb out. And then Driftwood, who happens to see them climbing out.
He loves the chaos.
Throws him a rope. Like, here you go.
I want to see how this plays out.
My second favorite joke. Dumb as shit. This is the kinds of do you know what I'm talking about? Tommaso starts to climb the rope.
Yeah.
He gets to the top. He can't reach Driftwood. And Driftwood says, well, you're all right, but the boat's too far away. That's so dumb. I fucking love it, dude. And then there's this whole physical comedy. Somebody was a stunt guy actually climbing this rope.
It looks pretty impressive.
Pretty harrowing, yeah.
There's some good climbing going on in this movie.
Yeah.
Rope climbing.
And then there's he ends up climbing into the room with the bearded aviators
who sleep together.
They do
in one bed.
Why wouldn't they?
They're brothers. They're brothers. They're close.
They're fellow aviators.
They're back sleepers.
The only aviator I've ever seen is Leonardo DiCaprio, and he peed in a bunch of jars in a room and stuff.
It's the way of the future.
So Tommaso grabs the scissors. Is he trying to cut a butterfly that's flying around the room or something?
It's like a moth. Yeah, like a moth or butterfly or something.
But then
lived in the guy's beard.
He starts to cut their beard. I don't even know what his plan. I thought he was just being a dick, but I guess they have a plan at this point.
He has a plan.
In the next scene, they arrive at New York, and Driftwood says he's the aviator's interpreter. So he goes in there, and all three of them are now disguised. I guess they've tied the aviators to the bed.
I love when Driftwood meets the city officials, and he kind of butts his way like, I'm their person. Come with me. And if you stick with me, hopefully a few of us will make it out alive.
It's like, what?
What?
Got to get the fear in them to help believe the lie. And they're disguised as the aviators. They've cut their beards and stuff and glued the hair to their face.
And they've tied up the aviators.
Yeah. But they end up at City Hall with the mayor of New York speaking to hundreds and hundreds of people and receiving this praise as these legendary aviators. And they have to give speeches. And
tell us something about your achievement.
I'll tell you about the story of how I got here. I flew here. I only got halfway. Didn't have enough gas. Had to turn around.
So I got even more gas. Got very close. We're within 3 minutes away, but I had to turn around.
Within 3 feet.
Within 3 feet. And the next time we got halfway there, didn't bring the plane.
Forgot the plane. So then I realized what to do. I didn't bring any gas. I didn't bring any plane. I took a steamboat here. That's how I flew. Eventually, they figure out that they are being swindled, accuse them of that, and they flip it on them. Driftwood's good at, he's pretending to speak a different language, I guess Italian. He's speaking gibberish to them.
Tommaso keeps pouring water, and I guess it's messing with the glue for his beard. Yeah, he's
chugging water.
Because he can't make a speech, but he has to make a speech.
Yeah. He just keeps drinking the water. So then the guy goes to apologize, the mayor, and hugs him, and the fake beard sticks to his face, and they're found out.
Egads.
So then they're on the lam in New York and hiding. So they go to hide in the hotel with Driftwood. And there's this weird scene with cupcakes where he's eating people's ties and pieces of Yeah, he's part goat, that one.
You're gonna be late for jail.
If it's the police, knock once more. They all jump out of the window. And his name is Henderson Plainclothesman. Of course it is.
Henderson Plainclothesman.
There's more hotel shenanigans.
Hey, why is this table set for four? And then there's a Scooby-Doo-esque scene where they're always in the room that Henderson's not in. And every time he goes, they're moving beds around for some reason. I didn't really understand why they kept moving the beds.
Oh, wrong room.
Wait a minute, there were four beds in here. How did those beds get in this room?
But they trick him.
Yeah, and it ends with them, they eventually stage, they keep putting new furniture in the second room, and they wear a beard and wear a coat, and they trick him to thinking he's wandered into someone else's apartment.
Wrong room. And that's actually terrifying, the disguise that they have.
Yeah, it's pretty horrifying.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that thing running at you in the dark?
I can't.
You can stop things coming through your doggy door. Raccoons, burglars, whatever that thing is. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that skit?
No.
I think you should leave skit.
I've only ever seen that clip on TikTok that keeps playing over and over. I didn't fucking do anything.
Well, it's a very similar skit to that where it's an infomercial for a doggy door, but it devolves into this monster. It's runs
a creature
at
feature.
Yeah, it runs from the darkness at him. And then and it turns out it was actually a pig with a Richard Nixon mask on. But he goes, I've been really tired for weeks and I hadn't been sleeping very well. So when I saw it for the first time, I thought it was a monster and I thought it was going to eat me. But really, it's my neighbor, Doug. And I fucking hate that guy. Listen, I'm not a fucking idiot. I knew it was a pig. I was just really tired. It's him trying to make up for the fact that he didn't realize it was a pig. It's a really funny skit.
Oh, I've also seen the one where he's harassing the haunted house tour guide with these really disgusting questions about ejaculate and stuff. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't seen that one.
You've never seen that one?
No, that one, no.
That one's hilarious. The guy's like, all right. So the rumor is that the ghost, the guy died in the early 19th century and his soul has been haunting whatever. And then he'll raise his hand. And at this point, he's asked so many of the same type of question that the guy's like, you're not allowed to fucking talk anymore. Stop it. You're ruining the tour. And so at this point, he's streaming tears and he's like, so look, I know I'm not trying to ruin anybody's day or waste your time or whatever. I just want to know, does the ghost bust nuts in here, or whatever? And It's ridiculous, but I ever since that, I've been like, I gotta watch that fucking show. Oh, there's my God.
Did you ever seen the Honk If You're Horny skit?
I've only seen clips of it. It's like Key and Peele. Like, I've never watched the show. I just see the best clips. And I'm like, God, I gotta watch that.
There's a dude who has like a bumper sticker that says Honk If You're Horny. And this guy keeps like falling, like honking, me, me, it's me, I'm horny, me. So good.
So yeah, that's funny. Much like the Marx Brothers are funny.
Yeah. Similar styles.
Everything. Kind of, except that Groucho famously refused to be a dirty comic. He never cursed. But Driftwood's fired and kicked out of the hotel because Ricardo reveals himself to Laspari. So all the effort that they went through to hide was in vain.
I didn't really understand why Ricardo punched him. Because, like, he kind of reveals himself. It's like, she's spoken for. And Laspari is like, well, I did not know that. Two's a company, three's a crowd. And he's like, how fucking dare you? And it seems like Laspari was like, very like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you guys were a thing.
Well, of course, he's smarmy. And we know that he is.
Yeah, he's smarmy. But in that moment,
he beats Tommaso.
Yeah, in that moment, he was like, oh, okay. Well, I didn't know. I didn't know. I'm sorry. And then he just says that three's a crowd thing. And Ricardo's like, I'll fucking kill you.
He knew what that meant. That was innuendo. He's not having a threesome. That's improper to suggest that she would.
I think that was inappropriate. A little bit of
it all worked out.
Flew off the handle, as it were.
He did. He got Rosa fired and everything too. Yeah. And Driftwood.
What a hero!
But they end up knocking out Gottlieb because that's Tommaso's move, and they slip "Take Me Out to the Ball Game" composition into the Il Trovatore opera.
Mm-hmm. Did we get to the part where Driftwood goes to the opera and everyone's like, oh my God, Mr. Driftwood, oh my God, I love you. And he gets in the elevator and Otto's like, oh, Mr. Driftwood, you're so cool. And then when he gets fired, Otto's like, elevators for employees only. And he kicks him down like four flights of stairs. Yeah.
He rolls. It's like John Wick 4.
And it's like a legit, really good stunt.
Yeah.
It looks amazing.
Yeah.
But I just love that character term where Otto's like, oh, you don't work here anymore? Get the fuck out. Yeah. Like, kicks him downstairs.
Elevators are for employees. I love the scene in the park, too. Like I was talking about earlier, that happens at this point. But then their big plan is to break into the opera. They put the, they infiltrate. And it's a bunch of cockamamie shit. I mean, they end up playing the ball game score and the whole time that Laspari's singing and doing his thing for the opera on stage, like they keep changing the backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And my favorite part
is when Tommaso and the conductor start like having like a little conductor sword fight with the wand.
That was my favorite part. That's what I was going to say.
Cause he starts approaching the conductor and the conductor's like, what are you doing? Stop it. Nope. Get away from me. Stop it.
He starts selling peanuts at the opera when the ball games song comes on. And then, you know, everything wraps up very quickly. I don't have many notes for the end. I'll be honest with you. They kidnap Laspari.
Yeah, there's so much happening.
Ricardo's offered a job, but he says that he demands that Rosa sing as well. So they both get to sing and everything ends happily in that way, except for the Marx Brothers themselves. But they'll be fine. They don't give a shit.
Yeah, the crowd gets to hear Ricardo sing. They love it. So when Laspari goes amazing. Out, they like boo him.
Yeah.
They threw an apple at me. How dare they? Yeah, and it's just a fun little, there's hijinks, there's a lot of wire work that's pretty impressive and fun to watch. But everyone, the opera company vouches for them, they get their jobs back. Tommaso rips Gottlieb's jacket because they get into a contract tearing a thon, rabbit hole, if you will, and Tommaso just like gets a little too jazz and rips Gottlieb's jacket. That poor dude.
Maybe I had a lot of practice ripping those contracts.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And then Fenn, the end of the movie. End. I've watched my first Marx Brothers movie. Write in if you've got another Marx Brothers suggestion. I think this is one of the highest rated, just from my limited research. I mean, Groucho was working all the way from 1921 all the way up into the 70s, I think. So there's probably a lot to watch, but this is a great start. I'm so glad you made me watch this because it's one of those things I probably would not have chosen to unless I challenged myself for something. Like I have committed to watching like City Lights and Modern Times as far as Chaplin movies this year. It's just not, I don't think it would be my thing, but apparently it is because I had such a fucking great time watching this. I gave it a 4 out of 5, I think, an 8 out of 10. I had a good time. A lot of like the chuckles that I got were very mirthful chuckles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the purest form of comedy, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of like, you know who Jim Gaffigan is?
Yes, absolutely.
I love Jim Gaffigan because he's also a comic that like refuses to be like dirty. For the most part, he doesn't swear for the most part. He's a pretty clean comic. And those type of laughs, there's something more, I don't know, there's something more like honest, not honest, but like mirthful, like you said. Yeah, there's like this lovely feeling to like a clean comedy where like, oh, that's so true. And that brings you back. It hits you in your childhood a little bit more, I think.
Yeah.
And that's what like literally everything that Groucho Marx was like saying was like hilarious and funny. And Chico was also pretty funny, but he seemed more kind of to the side compared to the other three.
Yeah.
And then Harpo got his moments. But I like I said at the top, like that style of comedy doesn't work for me, but I appreciated it, especially the musical stuff that he was doing. That was almost more impressive than any of the singing opera stuff that was happening.
Yeah, I got emotional during that scene.
Yeah.
But yeah, I dig a good clean comedy for sure. But I also ascribe to what Eminem says. Will Smith don't got a cuss to sell records, so fuck him and fuck you too.
Okay.
I don't know. I just,
keep your wife's name out of your mouth.
No. That's not the quote. But yeah, thank you so much for having us watch A Night at the Opera. We adore all of our patrons. Many more movies of the week to come. Mm-hmm. So check in next Wednesday for that one. Absolutely. Tomorrow is our episode 2 of Lost.
It's a good one.
And Friday is another adventure into space with Steve and Phil with Strange New Worlds.
That's Shagass.
That's all the time we have for right now. My name is Chris.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Ethan Hunt.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.